guys still an alcoholic? You know what? It's been 365 days in a row. Am I supposed to start speaking right now?
No, no, no.
But you know what? I'm going to save it for that. I'm just going to end with that, okay? Because I got a couple minutes I got to cover and a hit in a few minutes here. I don't want to give anything away. But, it's been 365 days, 1 year, and I, you know, it's been a long time coming, man. It's been a whole lot longer than a year for me to give a year. And so with that, I'm going to stop. Thank you very much.
I was going to take 48 minutes to introduce him, just to give him long enough to tell you his name and that he's sober, but I'm looking forward to hearing this. I wanted to share something briefly from our book. This comes from chapter 7, titled Working with Others. It says, life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know that you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And if you haven't had the opportunity to guide someone through the 12 steps yourself, I want to encourage you to please make the investment in your own life. The gentleman you're about to hear from has enhanced my life in ways I don't have words to describe. I'm a better man for having him in my life, and I want to introduce my friend Phil. There's some bullet points I want to talk about, and you know what, before I say anything else, I want to say that I want to give a personal thanks to everybody that, man, my phone is blown up today with the text messages and the happy birthdays and the we love yous and the voicemails, and if I didn't get a chance to send one back, or if I didn't get to say thank you tonight to you, I want to do that right now, because, man, I am overwhelmed by the effect. I mean, I've been coming to this meeting for a while, and about 9 months now, and I have never seen him have to move the wall over to get more seats in here. And you know what? I have so many friends tonight, and I mean, this guy right here, and all the things that are people, the way you guys have cheered and the way you guys have taken me in and rallied around me is so, I'm so grateful for that. I guess I'm here to share my experience, thanks, so I want to say thank you for all that. I really, really do personally, each and every one of you, for doing that for me. I promise I'll try to listen with my heart and not my head to the love and affection, so my ego doesn't keep me trapped in this room for the rest of my life. Because my head will swell to this big if I let it. So, with that being said, I'd like to start off by saying, you know, I've said this before, but it's always nice to stand behind one of these without having to enter a plea. That is a big change for me.
Look at an explanation
for that. I love you guys, man. I really love you. I guess I'm up here. I'm supposed to share my experience, direction, hope with you. One of my greatest wishes tonight is that I can say something that might push someone forward in this program and make them work the steps and make them to define the things that I found here. I came in here, I'll start at the beginning. I came in here separated from the pack. I came in here, I hated everyone. I didn't want to be here. I hated AA because I knew AA didn't work. I've been here a lot of times. And the fact was that I had never put myself in the program like I have this time. And I got zero results. You know. Backing up, let me go ahead and start. I was born in Camarillo, or Paso Robles, California. I grew up in Camarillo, down south, with my best friend Jeff down here. He's kind of like the co-star of the story I left to tell you. I told him, you need to come up, man, because you're going to be, I'm going to talk about you. But we grew up since we were kids, and we drank and eat together, and we did a lot of things, but he's my best friend, and I'm delighted that he's here. So I grew up down there in Camarillo. My mom was a waitress. My dad worked at the youth authority. Alcohol, I had a good upbringing. I had a nice structured family. Everything seemed to be okay. I was a baseball player. I played all-star baseball, made all-stars every year. Went to school, was a good kid. There was no physical abuse or any of that stuff going on in my life. I had a good upbringing. I played baseball, like I said, and I did the things that normal kids do. I never wanted for anything. My dad and mom were providers. I played baseball. I always had the brand new cleats. I always had the best glove. I always had everything that I needed. I went on this traveling all-star team, and they used to take me to cities, and we played baseball, and that was my thing. I used to play third base, and they used to call me the gunner because I could make the throw across the infield. And if you know anything about baseball, that's a long throw, and that's the way. I loved it, and I was a good kid. I got up. And alcohol for me was always around in my life. My parents were drinkers, but they were drinkers, and my grandparents and all that. My grandpa always had a keg of beer on the back porch of his house, and he drank beer every day, and my dad drank beer every day. But no, they were not, so for me to look at them and think to myself, well, surely I can't be an alcoholic, but I never drink as much as they do. My dad drank every day. 12 packs. You know what I mean? And you could never see the changes. So, I'm going to go back to the first time that alcohol, that I drank and felt the effects. Now, the big book talks about men and women drink essentially for the effect produced by alcohol. And you know what? First time I read that, I thought to myself, that's pretty much, I drank, the first time that I can tell you that I drank, me and my best friend Jeff, he got a car. He started buying a car. He was 15, I was 16. And I had a license needed, and so I would pick him up for school, and we'd drive that car around, and I got to drive him home at night, and the very first time, there was a couple of girls that we had met, Angela and Angela, and Angela T and Angela O, and so we get this car, and we take these girls to the beach in Ventura, California, and I don't even know where the alcohol came from, to be honest with you, but we had a big bottle of Jack Daniels. Southern Comfort, I'm sorry. Big bottle of Southern Comfort, and the one with the handle on it. And we passed that thing around, and I remember taking some drinks out there, and I've always been intimidated by females, and this was no exception. But that night, when I drank that alcohol allowed me to do and to be and to say things I couldn't do and be said without it. And I liked it because it got me, and I was pretty suave with that girl that night, and I took her home. I took her to my dad's house. And you know what? Alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself. It allowed me to talk to the lady. And it allowed me I started to live a lie that people liked me better under the influence. You know what I mean? And I liked myself better too. Because I always felt a little different. I always felt a little out of place, a little out of the ordinary. Lots of people talk about that, about, they didn't fit in. That was very true for me. Today, not as bad, but today I still suffer from the thing, from the prison. I live in the prison of what I see you think about me. You know what I mean? I live in that world sometimes today. It's not as prevalent as it was. I don't know what you think about me, but I think I can. My God, from the reception I got in here tonight, I don't know how I could actually think anything but love and affection from you. But before coming to AA, that's the way I live. I live my life. I had to be that guy. I always sit, I spot everyone's crew my entire life. Like I said, it allowed me to do the things that I couldn't do without it. She became my girlfriend, and that was a sign to me that, when I drink, I can hang out. And it works. I'm going to fast forward a little bit. I got into high school, me and my friend here. We would go up to Vaughn's grocery store. We'd get in the car before school about 7 a.m. We'd get in that car and we'd go up to Vaughn's grocery store up there up the hill, and everybody had their $2.
And we go into Vaughn's and we'd walk in, meet him and my friend Kurt, and we'd walk in and we'd swing through the liquor department. We'd each grab a half pint of vodka, put it right in front of our pants. We'd go over there and buy us a 7-Up or a Mountain Dew, one of those clear chasers, and we'd go up to the counter and we'd give the girl our money, and she'd say, "Oh, thank you," and she'd give us our change, and we had this joke, and we said, "No, thank you." And we'd walk out of that grocery store, and we thought that was so cute and so funny. And we'd laugh all the way down, and we'd drive back down to this high school parking lot, and we'd sit out there in that bag and drink that alcohol. And then we'd stumble in this class, and we'd go up there to class, and we'd last about two periods, and we'd start to get that feeling of, you know, when the sweat starts to wear off, and we'd be out, we'd be gone, you know. We'd get in the car, and we'd go back to my house. My parents would split up by then, and my dad was gone to work, and we'd stay there, and we'd smoke some weed or whatever we'd do, and act go to sleep for a few hours, and I'd get up and I'd go to football practice. And because I was a job, and I'm out. You know, I always hung out with the Lodies, but I was a job too. You know, we used to call them the Hessians. We were the Hessians. They were in the job back in the day. You know, I need to back up a little bit in my story because there's something profound that happened that I skipped right there. When I was about 13 years old, my parents had split up, and I held a resentment over that. You know, my mom's in the audience tonight, and we've talked about this, so I feel it's okay to share this with you because there's a lot of things, you know, I've got to make amends with her over this too. And she left when I was 12 or 13 years old, and I held a resentment. I thought, you know, how do you leave your kids? What the fuck? Why should you leave? That helped me not feel good. You know, it was a traumatic experience. A lot of things changed in my life right when that happened. And so my dad would be gone all the time, and we'd party in my house. There was no parents, there was no one there, right? And I held that resentment against my mom because she was gone, you know. And, but I didn't understand until later in my story, I'll tell you how we came to be reconciled with that. I'm going to fast forward a couple years. We got caught off campus one day. Me and my friend here and his older brother have been planning this boating trip, and we're going to go to Lake San Antonio over here in Pascuales by San Francisco County. And, you know, it was like the big event. We've been waiting. And all that, you know, we're going to go with his older brother and my parents. We're going to go have fun. We're going to smoke some weed. We're going to drink some beer. There's going to be other girls there. His brother's girlfriend's bringing her sisters, and it's going to be great. So we, 2 days before the trip, or one day before the trip, we get caught off campus smoking weed in the bushes, and we get suspended from school, and we get X'd out of that trip. You know what I mean? We got suspended, and my dad, I don't think my dad even knew about it, to be honest with you, because that's how out of touch I was with my family. I spent all the time in his house, and his mom was the one that said, "No, you're not going. You guys are not going. Forget it." And the day of the trip came, and we were like, "Man, we want to go so bad. Please, we'll be so good. We'll never smoke weed again. I promise you. I want to smoke every day. Please, 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 please." And we were begging her, and she was dead set. She was dead set. "No, forget it. Stop happening. Get out of here. Stop." And then something happened with the lights on the trailer. They couldn't leave in time. And then something happened with one of the tires on the trailer, and the trip got delayed a little more. And we were begging, "Come on, please, let's go." And finally she said, "You know what? Just go. Fine, go." So we went. And we went up there and we had a great time. I mean, we went up there and once again, alcohol did for me what I couldn't do. I met a girl named Paige up there and took her in my tent and we had a good time. But that's what I'm saying. Alcohol allowed me to do the things that I needed to do for what I wanted to do with her. You know, without it, I couldn't do it. So the last is on Memorial Day weekend, right? It's a 4-day weekend, and we're up there and it was the last day of the trip, Monday morning, and we had no money left, and we spent all our money on beer. We had no food. I remember we passed around a can of pork and beans, a large can of pork and beans with one spoon. Anybody want something to eat? Because we had spent all our money on beer, and we had enough gas to get home, and we had to take the boat from where we were camping around to the launch ramp to retrieve the boat. And my friend Jeff's brother said, "Gary," said, "who wants to ride the boat? Or, we got to go retrieve the boat, and we want to go." And I said, "I want to go. I want to see you one more time." They said, "Cool, get in, let's go." So we jumped in the boat. Me and Gary, his girlfriend Margo, and Jeff's niece, Melinda, which was about 6 years old at the time, and me. And there was only enough room for three people to sit in the boat, and I laid up on the front of the bow. And I said, "I'm just going to ride up to the middle and jump in the sea." And we started to go, and as the boat got out towards the middle of the water got more choppy and choppy, and I was on the front bouncing, and I remember saying, "Hey, slow down," and I looked back, I was right up there, my feet to the back of the driver, I said, "Slow down," and he took his foot off the gas, and I stood off the front of the boat head first, and I was running by the boat with the propeller,
nearly ripped my arm off, almost killed me. I remember talking to him about it after, and he said that they circled a couple times. They couldn't find me. I was underwater. I was in shock, face down in the water. They couldn't find me. They finally got me out. They finally did locate me. And I remember asking Gary about it, and Gary said that the hardest he pulled up there, jumped in the water, and the hardest thing about it was now that he was in the middle of the water and it was over his head, he couldn't get me up in the boat. He couldn't push me up there because I was dead weight and shock. And his wife, or his girlfriend's freaking out, and the six-year-old's horrified, and it was a very, and there's carnage and blood and guts and everywhere, and it was a very, very traumatic. They said my arm was barely hanging on by a thread, and so it was a very, very traumatic thing, you know. And so I ended up going to the hospital, and I barely survived, and you know, I'll tell you this though, when I was in the hospital, I was surrounded by my friends and my family, and one of the people that was there was my mom, and you know, I always thought she left me when I, you know, why would you be this, I can't even look at her right now, because when you start crying, I don't know, so I'm not ignoring her. But, you know, I always thought, well, how could you leave your child, you know, but she was there for me when I really, really needed her, you know, and when I was down and out, all my family and all my friends were there, just like tonight, you know, but I still don't remember those kind of things. I don't remember those issues. She stayed with me in the hospital for over 10 days straight. She stayed in my room, and she rented a little room at the lower level of the hospital where I was sleeping, like a little motel room we had there. But I forget about those things, and I forget about when she was there for me. I came back from the hospital after that. I was there 10 days, whatever, 7 or 8 days in intensive care and stuff, and I had a bunch of surgeries, and they repaired my arm, and sent me back home, and she stayed. She lived in Bakersfield at the time. She stayed there in Camarillo and lived back home with my dad and my sister and me. And took care of me. I had to have my bandage changed twice a day or something like that. And for over a month, she was there. It was gruesome, man. It was a hardcore thing. I mean, I had a little thing in the back of my arm where they didn't stitch it up because the pus had to run out of it. You know what I mean? So it didn't get infected, that kind of stuff. You had to stick T-tips in there, clean it out. She did that for me. You know what I mean? And I'll put a little more into my story, and I'll tell you some of the things that I did to her, because I forgot how good she was to me. I was still going on that in heaven. You know what I mean? Why'd she leave me? How could she leave me? Anyway, fast forward, I want to, you know, there's, I'm watching the clock back there, and I'm already running out of time, and I'm not even sober yet, so. You know what I mean? I've barely got drunk a couple times, you know what I mean? You know, I've been a lot of places. My disease took me to some places that I wish I never had to go to. And tonight, one of my reasons is that if I can say something to someone here in this room, doesn't have to go to the places that I went to. Because I had to go to prison a lot of times. I had to go to county jail. I've been in several treatment centers, in and out, in and out, in and out. And you know, like I was talking about that thing, I've always sought people's approval. I never felt like I was good enough. I felt like I had to prove myself to everyone. And I'm going to tell you a short story about something that happened in prison. I was in the county jail in Ventura. I was waiting to go to prison. And I remember sitting there the first time I ever went there. And there was a guy myself, who was my cellie, and he had tattoos from the neck down. And he'd been to prison several times, and he had tattoos like that old veteran, you know, long goatee thing with him. And he was bragging about how he had done 7 violations and 4 prison terms, and spent his whole life in and out. And I remember sitting there thinking in that cell looking at him, God dang, I hope I'm never that guy. I can remember that vividly like it was yesterday, thinking to myself, man, I hope I never turn out like that. You know, and like I said, I've been in and out of prison for at least 20 years. You know, I got here, but one of the things that did happen, like I was telling you, I remember going, I was sitting in prison and waiting, during my time, you know, no big deal. And there was a guy in there that they had an unwritten rule. You know, here's one of the, not only did my disease manifest as far as drinking and my capacity to drink and eat became more and more and greater and greater, but my values started slipping too, and I became a thief, and I became a liar, and I became a misery, and I didn't know how to keep my hands in my pocket. And there's a couple of my victims sitting in this room tonight, you know, that have forgiven me for what I've done. And you know, that's the power of the program working in my life today. But, you know, I'm going to tell you a story about, you know, I'm getting a little ahead of myself here, so I'm going to slow down for a second. I remember sitting in prison, and you have a little unwritten rule in prison that says that there's no thieves in prison. You know what I mean? I'm out here in society, running amok, stealing everything I can,
And then I go in there with these, this is why it was so confusing to me. One of the things that was so confusing. I go into prison, all of a sudden I got to live under some moral code. There's no demon going on. It's like, dude, I'm surrounded by thieves. What's going on here? How is that? I don't understand. And you know what? The thing is that if you steal in prison, they kick your ass. You know what I mean? Hard. You know what I mean? If you're lucky, if that's all that happens. You know what I mean? Maybe that's what I needed out here. Maybe that would straighten me up a long time. So I get in there, and you know, and nobody steals in there and stuff. And I remember there's also a thing in there where you have this code too of someone calls you a punk or a bitch and you don't do anything about it, then you're going to get your ass kicked again. You know what I mean? And I believe, this is for me, I'm only speaking for me. I shared this the other night with the guys over at the turn somehow too. But I believe that the reason that runs so prevalent in there is because that's exactly what everyone in there is.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was. I was a punk, and when you called me a punk, I didn't like it. And my only defense was to fight back and get angry and say, how dare you insult me when you're telling me the truth? I failed to realize that that's exactly who I was for many, many years. You know, I can't speak for anyone. I don't want nobody to meet me in the parking lot after me and get my ass up. So I'm not calling anybody in here a punk but me, all right? Let's get that clear right now. but that's exactly what I was. You know what I mean? It's just, and when you pull my covers like that, I retaliate and I fight back. And I've learned that fear is a strange emotion. And some people hunker down and I go back and fall apart. I jump into situations that I should never have gotten into. There was a guy in there from one of the other races that put hands on this white guy, and he didn't do anything about it. And you know, me being the guy that has to prove himself to everybody and show them how tough I am, they go, we're going to put a little crew together, we're going to go in there and teach that guy a lesson, right? And I jumped right to the front. I said, I want in. Because I got to show my fellows in there how tough I am and who I am. That's because I didn't feel worthy. I had to prove myself to those guys. What a piece of shit I really was. You know, and we went in there and we were kicking that guy's ass, and I'll never forget looking at that guy thinking, man, he's had enough, man. But you don't show any emotion and stuff like that, because if you do, you're next. You know, I live that life. I don't like that life. And that's not me. You guys know me. I'm not that guy. You know what? I came in here trying to seek everyone's approval, even in this program. I don't have to live like that today. I don't have to seek anybody's approval, man. All I have to do is be myself. And look what happens. You know what I mean? You guys taught me that. I learned that right here. I'm going to tell you a story, another little story about the way I rationalize things. I'm going to read something out of the book. I have found that every situation in my life today, bad or good, usually bad, there's a solution for me somewhere in this book. And when I seek that out, I can find just about anything I need to find. So right here it says, rationalization is giving a socially acceptable reason for socially unacceptable behavior, and socially unacceptable behavior is a form of insanity. I found, and the way that looks for a guy like me is like this. I was in a Walmart parking lot one day, and I found a wallet in the parking lot. Being the good crook that I am, I'm not going to turn it in. I got to get straight to the ATM. You know, we opened that wallet up. Some lady had lost her wallet. We found it, and I opened it up, and I thought, this idiot, look at her. ATM card, PIN number written right on top of her checkbook. I'm like, wow. So I go, okay, we got to go straight to the ATM right now before we report it stolen, right? If I got to get what I got to get, I'm going to get as much out of this as I can. I'm going to write this card right now. There was gas cards, Target cards, all kinds of stuff in there. So being a good crook that I am, I go, okay, let's go to the ATM, right? I'm going straight to the ATM. I've got my hooded sweatshirt on. I pull it up over my thing. I pull the string tight. So that nothing shows but my eyes. Right? I go up there, I put the card in, I come on the button. $200 comes out. Great. Card back. Look at her account. It says -$12. I go, huh. That's no good no more, right? Take my $200, I leave, we go party, we have a good time, right? I'm sitting in jail one day, on a totally underrated charge. They call me, they go, hey, you got a visit. I go, sweet, a visit, all right, cool. I go out there, right? They go, yeah, it's a detective from the fraud bureau or whatever it was, right? Yeah. And I'm like, all right, cool, what is this one? So he takes me in his room and he says, what do you know about this ATM withdrawal that's going on? Do you know anything about this card? And I know the code. You're never calling yourself. You gotta prove it to me. You got the wrong guy. I'm getting all expensive. I did it. Prove it. Hey, me. I'm getting all loud in the face, right? He goes, okay. He hands me a piece of paper and he says, take a look at this. And it's a picture of me with my hooded sweatshirt over my face. And I'm still lying. I'm like, that ain't nothing. And I look a little closer, and I look in the background, and there's my car with the license plate right in the picture.
some damn fine police work there, I'll tell you. But see, the way I see that is, I didn't steal that wallet, I found that wallet. I was rationalizing in my head, just like I just read. I'm going to come up with a reason that convinces you and me that I can keep doing what I'm doing. You know what I mean? And I ran with that. I did that my whole life. As long as I can convince myself and everyone else that it's okay to do it, I'm going to keep doing it. And I did it. I was okay with going to prison. It wasn't that bad. I would go to prison, and my dad would buy me gifts. He would send me packages. He would send me sweat. He'd send me cigarettes. He'd send me money. And you know what? I'm not blaming anybody but me for where I'm at today and what I went through. But man, he was loving me the best he could. You know, I promised myself that I wasn't going to do this, but there is one person that's not here tonight, my family, and that's my father. He never got to see me sober. You know what I mean? So I want to say one thing real quick. That dad and his boys finally make him good, man. You know what I mean? I just got to say that. I had to put that in there. I can analyze it like this. Analogy for me is like, I would go, he was loving me the best way he could. He worked in these authorities. He knew that the creature comforts for me in prison, what they were about, what they meant to me. He was trying to make me comfortable in there, but he was killing me, and he didn't know it. And I would get out, and I would move back in with him, and then I'm a junior, so we have the same name, so I would rob him blind. I'd get out, check this out, I don't know if you guys can visualize this, but this is how it looks in my head. I would get out, I'd move back in with my dad, and then I would punch him in the face, by stealing his checkbook and stealing his credit card and all that stuff. Then I'd end up back in prison. I'd make the radioactive phone call. And I'm back in. Can you send me some money? He'd be upset for a day or so. Then all of a sudden the envelope would come with the money. And then he would punch me in the face by sending me money in prison. And I don't know if you guys can visualize that, but for me that's real. I mean, he was loving me the best way he could. And I didn't know how to love him back. I was incapable of loving anymore. I don't feel that way today. I feel very, very loved. That's enough as what it was like for me. I guess you guys get the picture of what that was like. I want to share a little bit about, Bill asked me to do this a long time ago, a couple months ago, and I thought, well, the day will never get here. It was like 2.5 months ago, and slowly, the day was coming, the day to day. I want to share with you guys, when he asked me to do this, I've heard him give his spiel to people a lot. He goes, I'm always looking for people with experience working the steps, if you want to pull up there and share your experience with us. And I would tell him, I go, dude, you want someone to carry a real message, you need to get me up there. So, thanks a lot, Bill, for getting me up here and terrifying me. But I am truly blessed to have that guy in my life. I want to share a little bit, I'm not no step connoisseur. I'm not any step connoisseur, or I can't tell you exactly how to do it. This is just the way it worked for me. There's a guy who I live with over here in town. I live with my brother, my brother-in-law, my sister, and my two nieces were living there. And there's another extra party there. I'm going to say his name's Ernest for the anonymity clause because I. Caught wind, I would go down to the lounge club and I'd say, man, this guy's driving me crazy. And I'd throw his name out there and I caught wind that someone felt it necessary to go and tell that guy that I was talking shit about him. And I'm not sure that that's not true, but you know what? I've learned more about me through that guy than I've learned from anybody in this whole entire world. And I want to explain to you just a little bit about how this program, let me back up too. I lived with my two nieces over, we lived on Silverville when we first moved over here to Visalia. And it was, and we were all in our disease, not them, but their parents and me, and we were not paying our rent, nobody was happy, and we were all using and drinking and stuff, and it was bad, and there was a lot of hostility going on, and I don't know how to handle such, but I had zero, I was ashamed and embarrassed for them to look at me. I couldn't make eye contact with them. I couldn't, I'd walk in and I'd be like, hey, and I'd keep my head down. And I believe that they were probably a little bit scared of me. They were probably a little bit, they didn't know I was highly volatile. I thought the louder I got, the more reaction, the more results I would get. And it worked a little bit in that situation, So I wanted to make sure that I told that story so I could tell this next. Today I have a great relationship with those two. They're sitting right down here in the front, I was trying to get them to call them about a month and a half ago, and my niece, I came in, because she goes to CLS, and I came in there, and I took the assessment test, and she looked at my papers, and she goes, man, we got the same score on you, better than I did. Man, we will be the same math class together.
She didn't say,
oh shit, my uncle's coming to college? Oh my god.
No, she was excited. She was excited for me. You know what I mean? Excited because we have a relationship today. This program gave me that. I tell that story because I want to tell this next story. I come in here about 2 months of sobriety. I get sober, and there's a guy that lives with us that is not sober. He's still drinking and using, and he, like I said, I was about 2 months sober, and all of a sudden I come in here, and I'm 60 days sober, and now I'm walking hand in hand with Bill, Bob, and Jesus, and if I'm sober, everybody's sober, right? You know what I mean? And this guy's not living up to my expectations, right? He's a little untidy in the restroom, obviously with that. He doesn't clean up after himself. And one of the ways that I pay my rent where I live right now is through the work that I do around the house. I take care of the yard. I work for the landlord and part-time work for her. I'm kind of a gopher or a handyman type thing. And I take great pride in the yard because it's part of my rent, you know what I mean? And this guy's coming in and I come home and there'd be beer cans in the yard and there'd be scrap metal laying out there and you know what I mean? It's like, man, what's wrong with this guy? You know, he's disrespecting me, man. You know what I mean? And so the situation comes up to where I'm almost out of time already, guys are making. And the situation comes up to where his sister called me, Paul Goyne, and said, hey, I need some help painting some signs. My daughter's in the Mississippi County Tragic. And I wanted you to help me make some signs for when the pageant comes around. So okay, so she comes over and makes these signs and spray paint them and do all this stuff. Now mind you, she's a pretty girl, okay? But she's spoken for, whatever, but she's still a pretty girl. And just like the book says, let's try to find it. I've been paid over on purpose because I wanted to make sure I shared it with you guys. Yeah. The book says right here, selfish and self-centeredness that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation. But we invariably find that at some point in the past we have made decisions based on ourselves, which later put us in a position to hurt. That paint, that spray paint that my roommate decided that he needed worse than... She left that spray paint there after she left and she was going to leave it there, and I said, I'll wash that spray paint for you because I wanted her to see that I could protect her stuff, right? And this guy comes along, he wants to take that paint. And he said, it was a $5 bucket. I told her, I'll put that in the chest over here in the closet for you and I'll make sure it's safe. And I knew, because I said, if you leave that out, Ernest is going to get it, right? His name's not Ernest, but I have to say Ernest. So I said, Ernest is going to get that paint, you know, and sure enough, I come over from the meeting, and I see Ernest walking across the driveway with this 5 gallon white bucket in his hand. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, oh my god, he really did, right? So I go, I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to get that paint back, right? Because I got to show her what it got. I'm going to make this decision based on myself, because maybe if I... I'm not sure, but she might give me something that I'm looking to get. Right? Okay? I'm just saying. I was talking about friendship, come on. So anyways, Ernest has this bucket of paint, right? And I'm going to go out there and get that. And I go out there, and I don't know where he went, but he set it down next to his vehicle where he was getting ready to put it in there. Coming out there, and I snapped that bucket. And I took it, and I put it in my lock cabinet. I locked it in the cupboard this time, right? And I went back in the house and I put my shoes on and I sat on the front, on the back porch, and I was waiting for this guy because I knew what was coming, right? There was a time when this was building up to a confrontation that's been coming for a while. And one of the things that led up to it was, one day I told this guy, I said, hey, we all live in this house together. How come you can't just be cordial and just say hello? My nieces are afraid of you. What's wrong with you, dude? Come on. We're not asking you to sit down and have dinner with us. All we're saying is be nice, because he would come out and slam stuff around and he'd be upset and he's yelling the F-bombs and he's upset, right? And I told him that. And you know what he told me? He said, well, when they're way too sensitive. They're way too sensitive. And I thought, I'll show you sensitive, you son of a bitch. You know? And so now this other paint thing was just into this building up to the work, right? So what happens, and I go down to the alarm club and I'm like, this guy, you won't believe what he did today. And I'm in there crying and everybody's laughing. They're like, but I was just, all I was doing was learning how to deal with this situation. I wasn't in there talking shit about this guy. I was saying, I don't know how to deal with this. Well, I need help, right? So he comes walking up and he's like,
I see him out in the yard, he's kicking buckets around looking for that paint. He's like, hey, where's that thing of paint? And I told him, I said, hey, man, that ain't yours. He goes, I know who it is. And I go, well, if it ain't yours, keep your hands off it. And he blew up, and I rushed him. I was waiting for him. I egged him on, and I was waiting for that. And I got up, and we fist fought out in the yard. And I kicked him when he was on the ground, in the face and in the stomach. I beat him up. I broke my hand. I heard his cry, what I really did. I really, in front of my niece, and my sister was there, and I really, he was bleeding, and I'm not sure if verbal abuse or physical abuse is worse, because I'm talking to you about kicking your ass. I thought, oh, Jesus, everybody get that. And I thought, but I lost the battle, you know, and I get to the program, you know, and I had to make a quick amends with him, because I got kicked out of where I was, and I had to go. I had to make amends with this guy, okay? And I did. And I said, you know what, I'm sorry for what I did. I handled it wrong. I was wrong. And so I get to the fourth step, and guess who's on the top of my first resentment is Ernest, right? Okay? Because Ernest, I'm mad at Ernest because Ernest doesn't want to live the way I think he should, right? So I get over there and we did this little quick thing, and Bill says, okay, we're going to go. My sponsor broke this down for me. You know, the big bad fourth step is not so big and bad. It's someone breaks it down for you. And you do one. He said, I want you to make a list of all the people you're mad at. That's it. Don't do anything else. Call me when you're done. And then we took one name at a time. We went across. And we got over to that fear inventory, you know it? And he said, let's find out what the fear is, Ernest. Right? And I said, fear? I'm afraid of that. See, that kicked his ass once. I'll do it again. Right? And he goes, no, man. You're misunderstanding what I'm talking about here. He goes, the fear is down way deeper than that. The fear is that you're afraid that guy is going to make you look bad, and you're going to leave by bringing scrap metal and all that other stuff, and maybe you can't, you know, the fear is that you're not going to look good in front of his sister, and the fear that you're afraid that maybe your nieces won't think you're good enough to defend him, those types of fears. I was totally I have no clue. I thought it was physical fear. I didn't know it was fear that I might lose my place if I got scrap metal laying on the yard. I didn't know it was fear that beer cans were going to get me kicked out of where I was living. That's what I was afraid of. I had no idea. So then we get over to the other column. He says, now I want you to flip that page over. I want you to tell me exactly how you did the same thing that he did to you. How you did the things to others or him that he's done to you. Right? And the light bulb went on. You know what I mean? I got, for the first time in my life, I got to see that the reason that guy, my nieces were afraid of him, is because he was spiritually sick just like I was. My nieces were afraid of me. That's how the power of the fourth step worked in my life. That's what, and you know what? I came to a place where I thought, you know what? He no longer disrespects me, he's disrespecting himself. And I got freedom from that. I heard a speaker say, have you surrendered enough to where you'd rather be free than be right? You know what? I'm free of anything like that. You know, and I'm not going to lie to you, I don't love that guy, but the big book says that love and tolerance is our code. And I don't have to love everybody, but I have to take a kind and tolerant view of each and every person in it. Because I can't live with resentment like that. I can't live around that. You know what? I'm gonna share one more thing. I'm almost out of time. You know, there's a whole lot more I really want to talk about, because I'm truly passionate about AA. I love this program. It's changed my life, man. And the most beautiful thing about it is it's available to everyone in here, free of charge. One of the things that after that little incident, in a short time I've got to move out into my own little trailer. You know, I came from sleeping on the floor of my mom's house with nowhere to go, no hope. Pretty much resigned to the fact that my life was going to be spent the rest of my life. I was just going to get broke off 7 or 8 years in prison. I had no hope when I got here. And you know, I shared that voting story with you because I want to share one more story. I forgot what I was going to read to you, but all about that thing with us. Hold on, with you. The clock's ticking on. Sorry, you guys don't mind staying late, do you? So right here. You know, I got over that resentment. I thought I had gotten over that resentment with that guy, you know, because I was working a program and I thought it was going to go away and I thought it was just going to be, you know, hell, now I'm in the program. I dealt with it. It's done, right? But there's still things that about that guy that creep up now and again. So I'd go to the meeting and I'd say, man, it's coming back. I don't know what to do. What's going on here? And someone pointed me to this chapter in the back. It's called Freedom from Bondage.
And there's a little bit in there that says right here, if you have a resentment you want to be free of, if you will pray for the person or the thing that you resent, you will be free. If you ask in prayer for everything you want for yourself to be given to them, you will be free. Ask for their health, their prosperity, their happiness, and you will be free. Even when you don't really want it for them. And your prayers are only words, and you don't really even mean it. Go ahead and do it anyway. Do it every day for two weeks, and you will find that something mean it, and you want it for them. And you will realize that where you used to feel bitterness and resentment and hatred, you now feel compassion and understanding and love. You know what, I got to move into, I prayed that prayer for that guy. I was sleeping on the floor inside the house where my brother and my brother-in-law lived. I was sleeping on the floor in there, and I was praying, and I started to pray that prayer, and because that guy was getting back on my nerves, and things were coming back, and someone suggested that I start doing that. And you know what? I believe in the power of prayer, and I'll tell you why. Because I started to pray that prayer, and through some strange circumstance, God removed me from that situation. You know what? And God, you know, I thought, well, I'm going to pray that prayer, and God's going to remove him from that situation. Maybe I'll get him hit by a truck or something, and I won't have to deal with that anymore. But you know what happened? Check this out. This is what happened about 10 days into that prayer. The landlord where I live had bought a little travel trailer, and God put me in that trailer. I got to move into that trailer. She bought it for him, you know, and I got to move into that trailer. And God didn't remove me from all he did was give me a little space. You know, I mean, he doesn't say that God's going to take me to Nebraska to get away from this guy. He said, if you pray that prayer, great things will happen. And you know what? I can't discount that for anything other than something, you know what I'm talking about, you know, that's I have totally run out of time. There's so much more I want to talk about, man. You know what? I don't know if you guys are going to have to wait a whole year. I'm going to close with this. Check this out. If you're sitting in this room right now, and you don't think you can go through one more day, you don't think you can survive another day, the monkey's on your back, I promise you, if you take every craving, every obsession has a beginning, a middle, and an end, man. And if you just hang out with us, and you put in the work and the effort, you get great results, man. You know what? I have been truly, truly blessed. There's so many things that I want to say. I want to thank everybody for the affection. I really, really do. And you guys have given me so much. And God is so real in my life. And I just want you guys to know that I really love all of you and all of you. And I'm living proof that God could live for your side. I'm going to say one more thing. And that is... I'm going to tell you one of the most profound things that I've ever heard in alcoholics and I'm going to share with you. And that was, I heard a guy say one time that God doesn't need my permission to work in my life, but he doesn't need my cooperation. You know what I mean? You're going to close with that. Thanks. My name is Paul.